We'll talk more about that as well later on. Now, here on LBC London News, Donald Trump has come back from his holiday, and so has our US correspondent Simon Marks. Welcome back, Simon.
Thank you very much, Chris. Apparently, I am in a much better post-holiday mood than the President of the United States.
Now, I can't imagine why on earth that would be. Is it not all harmony and sweetness and light at the White House at the moment?
He apparently came back last night in an absolutely dyspeptic mood. There's a picture of Donald Trump, Melania, his wife, and their son, Barron, as they got off the chopper at the White House and walked into the building, and they all look extremely disconsolate, not clear at all that they had a particularly enjoyable holiday. The president, of course, argues that it wasn't a holiday at all, that he's been working hard at his golf course in Bedminster, New Jersey, and certainly one of the things that he was doing was overseeing the ouster from the White House of Stephen Bannon, his kind of grey cardinal ideology. Stephen Bannon departed the White House on Friday, spent the weekend giving extensive interviews, some of which are yet to be published. In those that have been published, he seemed to be threatening the White House at various times and suggesting that if Donald Trump were to depart from the path of right-wing conservatism as espoused by Stephen Bannon, then he would use the force of Breitbart News, the conservative website that he's gone back to helm, to try and keep Donald Trump on what Stephen Bannon would consider the straight and narrow. So look, I mean, I think it remains to be seen whether Stephen Bannon inside the White House, or rather Stephen Bannon outside the White House, is less damaging to Donald Trump than Stephen Bannon was inside the White House. But certainly the Trump administration is absolutely in a very weak position at the moment, not just because of Stephen Bannon's ouster last week, but of course also because of the president's kamikaze-style handling of the Charlottesville protests involving white supremacists on the one hand and anti-fascist protesters on the other hand. And Republicans up on Capitol Hill have been moving and are still moving to distance themselves from the president on that particular issue. We all received an email this morning from Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House of Representatives. Even today, 8 or 9 days after those protests in Charlottesville, Virginia, Paul Ryan moving to distance himself from the president and insisting that there is no room in modern American society for the kinds of white supremacist, anti-fascist, neo-Nazi protests that were witnessed in Virginia a week ago. So that's still a very potent issue for Donald Trump and an issue that is clearly causing those people around him in the White House some considerable dyspepsia.
And even though he's been on his break, he's still very angry with the fake news media, as he describes them, tweeting in the last hour, "Thank you, the very dishonest fake news media is out of control."
Yes, he has congratulated Stephen Bannon on returning to Breitbart News and suggested over the weekend that perhaps Breitbart News could correct some of the errors that the dishonest and fake media, as he describes them, continue to perpetuate against his administration. But look, let's be absolutely clear. Regardless of whether you think Donald Trump is getting a fair shake at the hands of MSNBC or CNN or The New York Times or The Washington Post, he's now facing a disaster that is entirely of his own creation. We saw poll data over the weekend showing that his approval rating has tanked even in some of those key battleground states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, that were so important to Donald Trump's election victory. And now he's going out on a limb and risking the support of his base, the firing of Stephen Bannon, the move of Stephen Bannon back to Breitbart News, the suggestion that Bannon is going to serve to some extent almost as a sort of a loyal opposition to Trump to try and keep him on that far right path along which Stephen Bannon propelled him, runs the risk of losing the support of some of Bannon's acolytes if Donald Trump doesn't adhere to the advice that Mr. Bannon, now outside the White House, is giving him. And then the stage is set, of course, tonight for this big speech here about Afghanistan troop levels, in which, once again, Donald Trump runs the risk of alienating his core supporters.
Next time, can we talk about the vessels and aircraft from the US, the from Indonesia, from Singapore and Malaysia? They're all searching for 10 missing sailors who are feared drowned after a US Navy ship collided with an oil tanker. It's not the first time it's happened. Why does it keep happening?
It's not the first time it's happened. And indeed, last night when I first saw the alert about this, I thought I was looking at an old dispatch. I thought, oh, that's strange. That happened a couple of months ago. And of course, I then realised, no, that was a different ship. This was the USS John McCain, a naval destroyer that collided with a massive oil and chemical tanker in the waters off Singapore. 10 sailors missing, 5 had to be airlifted to safety. The ship has now limped into port in Singapore, and an investigation is getting underway into how another US naval vessel equipped with state-of-the-art radar, communications equipment, you know, some of the most sophisticated military-grade equipment out there, how on earth did this collision happen, and how on earth have so many of these collisions occurred? 4 now in the last, I think, 53 weeks, just over a year, 4 of them. So this is a massive issue now for the US Navy. It's a massive issue for the 7th Fleet because it now has the USS John McCain out for repairs. It's got the USS Fitzgerald, which is the ship that collided a couple of months ago in the waters off Tokyo, out for repairs. That puts a real strain on the 7th Fleet's military capability, and that has a knock-on impact for North Korea because, of course, the United States would rely on the 7th Fleet in the event of any kind of altercation between Washington, D.C. and Pyongyang. But also, I think there are real questions here for the leadership of the U.S. Navy about just how battle-ready the U.S. Navy is if it can't stop its vessels from colliding with merchant vessels, particularly in the waters of Asia. Questions for Donald Trump as well about all of this. His handling of this last night was disastrous when reporters shouted questions at him seeking a reaction to what had happened to the USS John McCain. He simply responded to them, "That's too bad." He later corrected it by putting a statement out from the White House very late last night. But people, I think, were just stunned that the president didn't want to walk over to the microphones and at least express sympathies over what had happened to the sailors on board the USS John McCain. Thanks to Singapore and Malaysia for engaging in the search and rescue operation, and also concern about what kind of message this sends about the state of the US Navy to the wider world.
Yes, certainly some questions to answer there. One big question for you though, Simon, today. How excited are you about the solar eclipse?
I'm very excited. I'm sorry, in a way, I'm sorry we're on the radio, Chris, because otherwise you could see me wearing my solar eclipse glasses. If you go to Twitter, you can take a look at me at my solar in my solar eclipse glasses if you would like to see them. We are all they are a must-carry fashion accessory here in the United States today. We think we'll be blacked out by the sun in about, what, 3 hours and 10 minutes here in Washington, D.C. The eclipse begins over on the West Coast and heads over to the Carolinas just south of us here in Washington, D.C. I can tell you there's tremendous excitement in the schools here. My kids are being taken out of class this afternoon. They're all going outside with their solar eclipse glasses on to catch the history as it happens. This hasn't happened here since Jimmy Carter was president, and it won't happen again until 2055, and who knows who will be president by then. But yeah, there is tremendous excitement about all of this. I mean, not to get too political about it, it is though zoologically interesting that Donald Trump isn't trying to use this in any sense as a national science lesson. I haven't seen a single tweet from him yet about the solar eclipse, and we don't know if he's going to be participating in any way in viewing it. I think past presidents might have seized on this as an opportunity to encourage people to learn a little bit more about the world around them, but that doesn't seem to be happening under the Trump administration.
Because I seem to remember they used to do, certainly I remember Barack Obama doing it, or maybe Michelle Obama doing it, doing live broadcasts to schools from the White House on certain scientific matters.
Yeah. Yes, and well, I mean, you know, critics of the Trump administration would say that the Obama administration was much friendlier to science than the Trump administration has been. But I think that, again, without getting too political about any of this, virtually every past president that I can think of would have grabbed the opportunity, not just as political leader of the country, but as head of state, to say, look, this is a fun and exciting opportunity to learn something. Melania Trump, the First Lady of the United States, perhaps might have seized upon it. Ivanka Trump's tweeted about it. She got involved yesterday and suggested that she was getting pretty excited about what's going to be happening here over the next few hours. But again, no sense that this is being turned into a national science lesson, except by the people of the United States, who in their tens of thousands have been descending on national parks all over the country, because of course they're the best place to see this from, in natural beauty and in an area where there's no artificial light, just a straightforward open plane, as it were, for you to look at this thing through your solar eclipse glasses. So they've seen an enormous uptick in traffic, and indeed I was in a national park last week myself, and in a visitor centre there, and the phones were ringing off the hook with people calling up to find out when they could come into the park, did the park have any glasses, where would the best place be to view the eclipse. So there's genuine public excitement about this.
Well, no excitement here, unfortunately, Simon. We're expecting to witness a partial solar eclipse, but we've been told by the Met Office here, the weather forecasters, that it's going to be too cloudy, so we won't see a job.
And you're not even going to have Big Ben to listen to.
No, I know, really, the country's
What's
falling
the
apart.
What's the world coming to?
I remember the last time we had any sort of partial eclipse here in the UK, I think it was a couple of years ago, we were all sent to the roof of Global HQ to do our bulletins from the roof. And there was still cloud in the sky, so we didn't see anything there either.
Yes, I was happy to say that here it's a bright, sunny day, because if you'd woken up and discovered cloud cover over your city today in the United States, I think you'd be a bit disappointed.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Simon Marks, our US correspondent live from Washington. He's getting very excited about the eclipse. If you want to see him in his very fetching total eclipse sunglasses, then go to his Twitter account at Simon Marks FSN. You're listening to LBC London News headlines live from Leicester Square. Next.